Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Locked On Cavaliers. As always, I'm Chris Manning from Fear the Sword and Hardwood Paroxysm. Today, I am joined by a special guest. He's been on the show before. He's joining us from Vancouver today. It's Jacob Rosen. Jacob, how's it going?
Good. Thanks for having me here in Vancouver for work this week, but always happy to chat.
Yeah, a lot of Cav stuff going on. And before we get into that, today's podcast is brought to you by SeatGeek, the best way to buy and sell tickets right on your phone. So Jacob, before we get into Cavs stuff, and there's obviously a reason we have you on the show, and that's talk about JR's new deal. Holy crap, the Cleveland Indians are up 3-0 on the Blue Jays. We're literally recording this within 20 minutes of game three wrapping up. I don't know about you, but I did not expect this to be the way this postseason played out at all.
No, a baseball playoff baseball makes no sense. It never does. But man, oh man, this freaking team, battered and beaten, and just this bullpen, it's their first team ever to win a postseason game with not having a pitcher pitch two innings. Every single guy contributed tonight, and Lindor, and then Napoli, a guy who literally hasn't hit worth anything for 2 months, delivers every clutch hit possible and steals a base. It's just an insane run right now.
Yeah. I mean, after I didn't have the game on right away, and then my dad goes, Bauer cut his hand. and I look up the picture on Twitter and it looks terrible. I'm like, okay, like we'll take the L, and you know, tomorrow you can probably pitch Kluber and it'll work, and just everything broke, right? I mean, the Napoli thing, he's been bad for about like a month. Like, he hasn't been Napoli that we saw the first couple months of the season, just hitting bombs and dingers like every game, it seemed like. And tonight he was like pretty much like the Mike Napoli we saw for a while. It was awesome. Like, this is, it's been so fun to watch this team. Like, they just have so many likable guys. Kipnis and Lindor are amazing. The bullpen are great. Andrew Miller is just like under. Like, I remember when they got Andrew Miller, I was like a little like weird because I was being dumb and was like, oh, Clint Frazier is going to be great. Andrew Miller's worth literally everything you could have traded for him.
Very good. And we gave up two good, you know, double A, triple A relievers in that, too.
Yeah. And I mean, you got a guy who's literally been great. And for those of you that don't know, next week, assuming the Indians close this out, game one of the World Series will be in Cleveland. That is also opening night for the Cavs against the Knicks. That AKA ring ceremony night and championship banner night. So if you're planning on going
we've been talking about that night.
Yeah.
As if it was some theoretical thing. And we're now up 3-0 in the ALCS. This is stuff we dream about when you're kids, man.
Yeah, everything really changed with that Cavs title. And this is just, it's just unbelievable. Just can't even believe that this is like where we're at. Indians are a game away from making the World Series. It's crazy. But to get to Cap stuff, J.R. Smith obviously just signed a new deal. It's a 4-year deal, $57 million overall, $45 million guaranteed over the course of that deal. And it's a pretty, in my take, it's a pretty reasonable deal for the Cavs. It worked out pretty well, I think, for both sides. J.R. got only $500,000 less guaranteed than he has made to this point in his 12-year career. He gets to be where he wants to be. The Cavs kind of lock in their main core for the next 3 years, or at least 2 years. LeBron's really the next guy that can test for agency that is a very important player or someone that you wouldn't expect to just be a short-term guy. Before we get into some of the nitty-gritty of this, Jacob, how do you grade this deal for the Cavs?
I was talking about this all summer long, wrote a long thing about it last month, I'm waiting for next year. I think it was a hard negotiation because both sides were in a peculiar spot where they need each other. They realized that there was no other spot but just making everyone happy. And I think for the Cavs, you had to do this deal. The Cavs are just that team, and I think this was the case last year with Tristan Thompson, where each one of these guys are so incrementally valuable and irreplaceable because of the Cavs' peculiar cap situation that you just have to give them whatever money it is that makes them happy. Ultimately, the Cavs are able to drag their foot out. So is Rich Paul, who's a very good negotiator, clearly, from all these different situations. And you try and put your foot in the sand about what you think is the best. But ultimately, the player is going to win because you need the player. And it's good to see, from the player's perspective, it's cool to see. From the team's perspective, it's good to see that they got it done. But I think it was just a matter of getting J.R. Smith back on the court early. Last year, the Tristan Thompson negotiations went on about a little over a week longer. So it's nice to get J.R. into the rhythm of things, not just the day before the preseason.
Yeah,
the day before the regular season.
Yeah. I don't expect him to be in peak game shape the next couple weeks. Trevor Magnotti for this wrote yesterday about JR probably is going to struggle to start the year. He even said himself he's not in game shape. He's like, I've been working out. We've seen him working out he's been popping up on LeBron's Instagrams and stuff, but game shape is different than I've been working out all summer and stuff shape. He hasn't, gone through some training camp stuff. And that's not the most important thing, because I think sometimes that gets overstated, at least in the NBA, but it's probably going to take him a little bit to get used to being back playing all the time, and he's going to have to scrimmage, and we don't even know if Tyronn Lue has really implemented anything new that JR is going to have to pick up now, but I also don't know how much I worry about that, because if there's ever a situation where a player that was a free agent was in clear communication with this team and his coach, it would be JR and this Cavs team, because A, he was hanging out with them like every day, and he said so himself, and B, I think everyone on both sides, even if they were negotiating, and there's the Sixers thing that came up, and if he was supposedly going to open up negotiations with their teams, I never got the sense, and I don't know if you did, that he was actually going to consider going anywhere else, and that I feel like he was just really, the whole time, it was just a waiting game, and ultimately it worked out.
Yeah, no other team really made sense. If you look at the teams with double-digit cap space, you were looking at Philadelphia, Brooklyn, Denver. That's pretty much about it. I think maybe one or two other teams, but nobody else had significant enough cap space to give J.R. Smith a market value deal, which he was going to get double digits. There was no doubt about it. It was just, I think a matter of time. And Philadelphia made sense to try. Philadelphia's made some interesting little sneaky free agent deals this offseason. But they're still a very bad team, and Brooklyn's going nowhere, and Denver's interesting, but still not a playoff team. And I think it just made sense always for J.R. Smith to come back. It was just a matter of meeting in the middle somewhere. And as you said, this is one of the most lame duck regular seasons that could ever be realistically possible for any team ever in any sport, because the Cavs having won back-to-back Eastern Conference championships, LeBron having won six straight, the East being what it is, this team, everyone coming back besides, everyone who was a contributor in the NBA final series coming back. Obviously, losing Deli and Mozgov can hurt in certain ways, but the main guys are back. And even if the first week or two or month, Tristan Thompson wasn't 100%. I remember seeing a lot of hand-wringing about his first dozen or so games last season. It's going to be fine, because all that really matters is this team peaking at the right time yet again.
Yeah, it's a long game. It's a long season, and November does not matter really that much. Injuries would matter more than JR being out of shape. The Denver thing, it's so interesting, the teams that came up, because I feel like with the Sixers, With the Colangelos there now instead of Hinkie, they value the relationships, and if they're meeting with Rich Paul, you know, maybe they're trying to think, okay, we get our foot in the door here, make a little rapport, we get it. The Nets, to me, makes literally no sense because there's no point. At least Jeremy Lin can, like, orchestrate an offense for them. JR just kind of takes away minutes from guys like LeVert or Red Hollis Jefferson, whoever. And the Nuggets, you know, they went after Wade this summer, obviously, and had a meeting with him and stuff, but they have Jamal Murray and Gary Harris at two guard, and they're young. I mean, you don't need a guy like JR sucking up minutes from your talented young players. And the team like Boston that was interested in him, supposedly, A, didn't have the money to compete with him because they don't have his bird rights and their cap room is, you know, gone, basically. Even them, like, they have guys like Avery Bradley and stuff that you maybe don't necessarily need a J.R. Smith, so the Cavs just make way more sense. We'll get into some long-term implications for this in a second, but we're going to take a quick break to hear from SeatGeek, today's sponsor of the podcast. Hey everyone, as you know, today's podcast is brought to you by SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easy way to find tickets for football games you want to see up close and personal this season, or NBA games you might want to see as the season gets going. As you know, there is nothing like being in the stadium or the arena for the biggest plays of the year, and with SeatGeek, it has never been easier to get guaranteed seats the way you want for a great value. Myself, I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats for this weekend or any game this season. With SeatGeek, you always get the best deal on every ticket because SeatGeek price compares for you by searching multiple ticket sites. Prices can vary depending on where you shop, but SeatGeek will always find the best available price. Also, SeatGeek wants to help you get the best bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Plus, every ticket you buy on SeatGeek is backed by their 100% guarantee, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Best of all, my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, first, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, and click add a promo code, enter the promo code LOCAVS, that's LOCAVS, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So again, download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code LOCAVS today, and save $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. I promise you, you won't regret it.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
And we're back. Thanks again to SeatGeek for sponsoring today's show. So, Jacob, I think the way to look at this deal that I think is the most interesting is it is sort of similar to Jamal Crawford's. You know, that's the guy that I think came up a little bit when we thought about JR's deal. But there are a few little differences. Crawford's deal, over per the Vertical's team salary pages, his deal is going to go up over the next couple of years. He could be waived, I think, in 2018. Get him off the books, and JR's deal is a year longer, but JR's deal actually goes down over the next couple of years. So this year, he's going to make about 15.7 when you round up, then 14.7 in 2017-18, then 13.8 roughly in 2018-19. Then the last year, there's about a $3 million or so guarantee, and the Cavs could waive him. And, you know, if depending on how things shake out, that's probably a likely scenario, just how those things work and what the cap is, where the CBA is, whatever. The money going down to me seems like a good thing, but I don't know if I'm putting too much stock into that because, A, Kevin Love's salary is going to go up in the next couple of years. LeBron's and Kyrie's do the same thing. Tristan's does the same thing. Shumps even does the same thing. To me, having even a little bit of money go down over the next couple of years seems like a good thing.
Yeah, and I guess I've still seen some conflicting reports, just trying to, you know, find the most recent information. But I know I saw that it started at 16, and then I saw that it was just going to start and escalate up. So I'm not 100% sure what's the most recent on that. I know I saw today here on Monday that it would start at 12.8 as I initially expected. So I'm not 100% sure. But I think the main point was the Cavs and where they're going to start with their taxes this season. They already were well over the tax. You knew that they already had a ton of money guaranteed for several years in the future. But it's still to be determined exactly, you know, where they might be in 2 or 3 years because they want to have some flexibility. But with this season, it was always a matter of they're just about at, you know, or slightly over the tax pre-J.R. Smith. With every dollar spent to him, then every $5 million more, you're going to be taxed an incremental higher level and higher level. So I think for JR, it was always a matter of cementing himself as a guy who's clearly above Jamal Crawford's value, Crawford being 5.5 years older, perhaps not as more valuable on the defensive end in terms of what JR did in the playoffs. I think another guy that is fair to compare to is Eric Gordon, who got 4 years, $58 million. 4 years, $53 million, obviously, with Houston this offseason. So I think JR was always looking at a deal slightly more than Crawford or Gordon. And for the Cavs, it's always made a matter of, you know, making the budget work enough for this year, whereas their tax scenario and overall payments would be close-ish to what they did last year.
Yeah, the Eric Gordon thing is interesting because I think if we were to look at them straight up as players, you just look at what they put up statistically and you look at their health records, JR's the better player. Eric Gordon's been hurt. He has never really consistently been the type of player I think that some people thought he'd be coming out of college, that he showed he could be during their first couple years in the NBA. The JR thing is always just he has the reputation of being sort of a knucklehead because he's J.R. Smith, and that always has worked against him, and that he has to be in these right scenarios. I mean, I was looking up some of his history over the last couple weeks, just kind of like thinking about where how he got to this point. And it was like 2 weeks before he got traded to the Cavs that the two back-to-back untying other players' shoes things happened. Like, he was like the peak J.R. just kind of being J.R. like right before he came to Cleveland. And, you know, I mean, it's JR, and he's always going to be kind of a goofy guy, but I think he is a little bit more complex than just him getting written off the win, but I do think he does at least sometimes get written off the win. That doesn't necessarily help him when he's trying to get the biggest payday of his career. I mean, because realistically, this is JR's last, like, big deal. Like, you would just kind of assume. So there's literally no way he makes this much money again on his next contract.
And as you were mentioning, you know, per Basketball Reference, I see that he's made $45.5 million guaranteed in his career, and this deal gives him $45 million guaranteed. So he just turned around his most consistent regular season, completely being an upstanding citizen in Cleveland, a great playoff run, and he turned it into doubling his career earnings just like that. You can't speak enough of what JR has meant to this team, his contributions to it, what everyone speaks about him in the organization. I think it's really been a renaissance of JR. You look at some of the articles that continue to come out about his personality, about his entrepreneurship, you know, starting his own business back in New Jersey with his dad, getting married recently. Everything he's done has seemed that he's really turned his career around. It's so cool to see a guy who always has been extremely talented. There's been no doubt about that. But it's cool to see it all take place in Cleveland, where everyone now thinks a little differently of him.
Yeah. I mean, J.R. Smith really was profiled in the New Yorker. Yeah. Like, that is something I don't think I ever would have expected to say or get a copy of the New Yorker and see a J.R. Smith profile in it. Just kind of an unbelievable thing. I mean, I'd expect, like, LeBron to be in there at some point, but, like, J.R., that's pretty cool. So before we kind of talk a little bit about general Cavs stuff, you look at the Cavs as cap sheet over the next couple of years, and obviously, as you mentioned, it's maybe not 100% sure how this is going to be structured yet, but I think the one thing we do know is LeBron James has 2 years where he will for sure be here. Kevin Love is signed through the 2019-2020 season. Same with Kyrie Irving. JR could be waived kind of heading into that season with that $3 million guarantee. Thompson also is on that time frame. Shumpert is a year sooner. They have most of the guys that I would consider their main pieces locked in. You know, you'll have to replace the Richard Jeffersons and the Mike Dunleavy's and probably the Channing Frye's of the world, but they have their main guys, all going to get paid a lot. They're going to be paying the tax probably. I think the new CBA is going to be really interesting because it could remove them from some of the tax, some of the repeater taxes, but they're in that category. What do you make of where the Cavs are at financially over the next couple of years?
As you, I think the main point really there is how the repeater tax looks in the new CBA, because that will affect some of the Cavs' flexibility in a lot of these ways. We have cap projections so far going into the future. I think one thing to note of how the cap and the outlook of the NBA has changed a little bit is that initially the NBA was expecting teams to not spend as much as they eventually did this past offseason, which was why there was going to be further jumps in the cap. But because teams spent what they were supposed to be spending, the shortfall in the future wasn't as big as initially expected. So the cap is going to plateau to an extent. It won't continue to rise. Obviously, the New Jersey deals, the TV deal kicked in this year. The NBA will continue to grow in terms of popularity and revenue, but it's not going to have a gigantic jump like it just did. So the Cavs being at $122 million guaranteed in salaries already for the 2018-19 season are at or as far surpassing a tax line even well in the future. You know, looking at the luxury tax projection for that season, it's $130 million, but the Cavs only have six players on the books that season, and they're already over, and right at that line.
Yeah.
So it's pretty obscene in terms of the lack of flexibility they'll continue to have, assuming the new CBA is fairly similar to the current one. But in terms of some moves they could make, obviously they've continued to have a handful of trade player exceptions. I think one thing that will be interesting to keep an eye on in terms of what they did last year, what they could be thinking of doing in the next year or so potentially, is Iman Shumpert. I think last year, obviously, they made that deal where they swapped Varejao for a trade player exception, used that to take in Channing Frye's lesser deal. And because of the way that taxes aren't counted until the end of season, that saved the Cavs a lot of money. If they could find a similar way in which they could trade away Shumpert and his $9.6 million and then $10 million and $11 million guaranteed in the third year, still left, and get a lesser deal coming back, that could open up a lot of flexibility. So I don't think that's necessarily something they're immediately looking to do. Shumpert still has a big role in this team. I think people perhaps underestimate what he can continue to do. Sans Dellavedova, if he continues to, he's still a very young player. But in terms of what, you know, they're not getting rid of J.R. Smith, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, LeBron James, Tristan Thompson anytime soon. So Shumpert would be the guy in terms of still having three full years guaranteed if they were to ever open up some moderate flexibility long term.
Yeah. I actually think this year is just such an interesting year for Shumpert because I think he really might be the most important player on the bench because he's younger than a lot of the guys he's going to be playing with. He's going to maybe be the nominal backup point guard sometimes if they decide that Kay Felder's not ready.
Or Jordan McRae can't handle.
Yeah, and I think Tyronn Lue's already kind of shifted away from saying McRae's going to play point guard. He said that experiment is over. Shum's going to have a chance to really play a big role, and I think it's interesting because if he does really well, it seems like his trade value would go up because I'm not sure exactly how high it would be right now. He was really bad last year. He was hurt. You've heard the little bit of rumblings that maybe he doesn't care that much about basketball or teams don't seem to like the fact that he, raps and just has like this kind of other life. And I think that's fine that he does, but it seems to like come up again and again. It'll be interesting if his trade value goes up. I totally could see them trying to move him. I mean, there's always been the talk of, like, do you trade him to the Kings for somebody? And he's the kind of guy that I think teams, in theory, would take a chance on because he is a guy who can guard a couple positions, theoretically can shoot a little bit, and he plays a spot that I think is really valuable in where the league is at now. And the trade exceptions, and we talked about this last time you were on the show, just so everyone knows, they're not as easy to use as you think they are. Just remember that they are not something the Cavs can just use because they want to use one.
You wouldn't want to use them now because of the way of how high the Cavs are over the tax. Just looking at the verticals page again, the Cavs are already $17 million over the tax. That would mean for every new dollar brought in, so say the Cavs get rid of nobody, they only have 13 guaranteed guys right now fully. Assuming they get rid of nobody, they just use that 14th spot and take in somebody, they're getting taxed times 3.5, 4 on every new dollar. So say they bring in, a guy who's being paid $7 million a year this season, they're going to be taxed an incremental, say, $17 to $20 million on that amount of money. So is it worth it to bring in, say, a Rudy Gay and pay $30 million for him this season? Because that's kind of the incremental effect of bringing in that money right now, unless you were able to clear an Iman Shumpert or something from the books. So, that, again, it doesn't help the Cavs. The Cavs pulled off a crazy move to improve their team and save $30-plus million in the Frye-Varejao swap last year. That doesn't just happen out of thin air that often. So I think it's a little bit of fantasy to think that it's just going to happen again. But if the Cavs were interested, Shumpert is the one guy who might make sense in terms of a move like that. But as of now, it would seem that, you know, the roster is pretty well set. I didn't expect any sort of moves anytime early in the season. But if, you know, the Cavs think they need another piece, that might be the way in which they could do so.
Yeah, I think that would be the way they'd have to do so. I know we've already kind of heard rumblings that they're maybe going to consider, you know, maybe getting a point guard with the trade exception. To me, that doesn't make a ton of sense because, I mean, when you get to the playoffs, LeBron's your backup point guard. Like, you know, do you really want to, you know, spend money on somebody who's maybe going to play 10 minutes a game in June? I don't know if that really makes a lot of sense.
That's hard. You know, how many guys are on teams that are valuable and would play a huge role in the Cavs that a team's just willing to give them up for nothing.
Exactly.
Assets that they'd be willing to part with because they really don't have very valuable draft picks in the future. It's not like they're just going to dump, you know, somebody else that's playing a role on their team. It's just hard to make a deal work with the Cavs in their situation because they have so few young players, so few draft assets or anything.
Yeah. 100% correct. So before we let you go, Jacob, you said they're at 13 guaranteed spots. What if you were David Griffin? What would you do with those last two spots?
I think as of now, you leave it open for whatever could come down the line. Obviously, you've got some players that are free agents that are still on the mend. I think you have seen some good spots from Jordan McRae and others. I would just leave it as is. You obviously got Felder as a guaranteed spot for this year. You see who continues to shine from Liggins and Jordan McRae, et cetera. You leave them there for now, and you cut them sometime during the year if need be. The Cavs have played that game pretty well over the last several years when they were good, when they were bad, and I think they'll continue to do so. I don't think there's any rush to immediately have to find the answer immediately. They've done well over the years with guys like Cunningham and Joe Harris, etc., and then moving on if an opportunity arises. So I think there's, you know, we are Cavs fans, we're always impatient to a degree, but it's fine to just understand that, you know, when something comes up, they'll take advantage of it. I think that they go with the young guys for now. You give them a large opportunity because, again, it's a lame duck regular season to an extent. In November, or during a blowout, or during, say, a road back-to-back or something like that, you give LeBron and some of the guys an off day, and you see what you got out of McRae and the Liggins of the world, and if you like it enough to continue to give them more of a shot, and you just play it by ear from there.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure McRae will be in the team of bringing that. The one thing that I'm interested to see how they handle it is what do they do with Dante Jones, because he hangs out with the team all the time. They really do value that, having that veteran guy there, I think. But I also fully am in favor of the argument that that is a kind of a wasted spot with him being there. I know that he fits the locker room. I know he helps your culture. I know that there is certainly a value to that. But, A, that's a tax spot. Or whatnot, because of the minimum. But it's just taking up a spot you could maybe find a guy in the D League. You could maybe, if you get a guy like McRae, like they found last year, that they want to get, Dante Jones is blocking that spot, and he's not gonna. There's literally no chance of him becoming a rotation player for your team. So I don't know. I think there's a chance they keep him. It doesn't seem like they maybe will, but he definitely, just because of his relationships and everything like that, I think there's a chance he's on the team. I don't really get it, and I'm not really in favor of it, but I think that's a possibility. But I'm with you. I think the best thing to do is to maintain flexibility and see if McRae can be something, because I think they do really believe that he is an NBA player. Phil Handy's worked with him a lot. He's tight with Shump and Kyrie, and they've put a lot of time in him, and they've talked about him a lot on their own, just on their own. So, I mean, they gave him basically a chance to be a leading scorer in Summer League. So, we'll see where it ends up with him. I'm not the biggest fan of his. I'm not sure exactly how good he is, but I think they think that he at least is someone who can play in the NBA.
Yeah. I think there's, with Dante Jones or whatever, I think the Cavs will, play by ear, keep their options open. At the end of the day, it's a 14th, 15th roster spot on a really, really good team. And, it's not the end of the world. And if an opportunity arises, they'll go for it later in the year.
Yeah. The last thing we'll let you go on this. Backup point guard is obviously a spot that I think Cavs fans are a little bit worried about. Felder obviously has guaranteed money. And I think they're high on him. I think, paying to get him, giving him minutes in preseason, Tyronn Lue said he's the backup point guard for now, kind of half-heartedly in a recent scrum. So what do you think of the backup point guard? Is Kay the guy you would start the season with? Do you maybe wait for Mario Chalmers? Do you, take advantage of Norris Cole because he can get out of his deal in China? What do you do there?
I had a nice conversation with Zach Friedland, Peach Ops, here in New York where I live, a couple weeks ago about this. I think people, to a certain degree, Dellavedova obviously played a very good role and played it well for the Cavs. But to an extent, it's not a traditional point guard. He brought the ball up sometimes, but he passed the ball around. He shot open shots. He made his floaters. He did his alley-oops. But it wasn't necessarily, any backup point guard to an extent plays a role, but it's not just being what a starting point guard does in terms of distributing and leading the offense in that kind of way, especially when you have LeBron and Kyrie Irving playing a lot of minutes alongside you. So I think what people are underestimating to an extent is the role that Shumpert and Dunleavy will play when healthy this year in doing some of the things that you would normally have seen from Dellavedova in those minutes. I don't think they're going to entrust Kay Felder to immediately take all Dellavedova's minutes. I think you'll slowly warm up to him. You play him, like I was saying, with regards to the role that you could see for McRae or Liggins earlier in the season. But I think the backup point guard has taken on the sort of urban myth or legend that people continue to hype up, where it's a point guard, positions are all hybrid kind of things these days. And the way in which Dellavedova did his things, I think that Shumpert and Dunleavy can do them fairly well as well. So I'm not too worried about it compared to a lot of Cavs fans. Again, it's a weird season where we want to get amped up about every little thing, but I'm not too concerned about this topic overall.
I'm with you. I think I'm nuanced with this. I think you wait. I think if you play Kay Felder, you see if he actually can be something. And if he's not by January, or he's not by the time you need to sign someone to be on the postseason roster, then maybe you go get a Mario Chalmers. Then maybe you find a guy that you like. And again, when it comes to June, when it comes to the playoffs, LeBron James is basically your backup point guard anyway. So I'm not sure. I don't think it's like a huge deal. I think it's something that is interesting to look at because I think Felder is a chance for them to develop somebody. But I also don't think it's a big deal one way or another. If the Cavs don't repeat, I don't think it's going to be because they didn't have the type of backup point guard that I think some people expect them to have. Or that Felder didn't develop enough. I don't think that would be the reason, really, why they wouldn't repeat. So, Jacob, thanks for coming on. We really always appreciate having on. Your insight is always top-notch. Where can people find you on Twitter if they want? If they aren't already following you, where can they find you?
My handle is Jacob L. Rosen. I write for William for Next Year and Harvard Paroxysm. So thanks again for having me on the podcast.
Always happy to have you on. And as always, you can find me on Twitter at CDBlumWrites. You can find the podcast on Twitter at Lockdown Cavs. Again, thanks to SeatGeek for sponsoring our show. They're always a great sponsor. Always great to have them partner with us in the whole Lockdown Network. If you have mailbag questions, drop them on Twitter to Lockdown Cavs or to email at lockdowncavs@gmail.com. This has been Chris. This has been Jacob. This has been Lockdown Cavs. And we'll talk to you tomorrow after the Cavs wrap up their preseason schedule in Columbus against the Wizards.